Good morning. I hope you're all doing well today. I woke up this morning, looked out my window, and I wondered what all that white stuff floating around was, and I thought it was insects, and then I thought it was weeds, and finally got in the car and found out, oh, yeah, I'm in Missouri. Never know what to expect. As long as I can remember, ever since I was a child, almost every church I've been in of the Church of Christ, except, I just found out last week, except Canada, has a clock right up there in the very back of the church. The audience, for the most, can't see it unless they're obvious to do one of these, which happens occasionally. I've done it. But it's for the preacher to sit there and see the minutes ticking away, and see the hour, because we kind of have officially set 1 hour for the guy to stand up here and preach to us, and we want to remind him, keep him in tune of where he is. You know, I remember a service I was in Phoenix, and it was a particularly long prayer service, and my father had the audacity to get up and walk back and unplug the clock. I mean, it was already past the time. Boom, the clock was unplugged. I think probably everybody that was there that day remembers that event. That service went much longer. But everything should not have limitations. Don't let me scare you. I'm not telling you this is going to be a long sermon, okay? That's not the point. I'm telling you, we have no limitations on certain things, that we shouldn't put them there. The duties that God has given us, we should not put a limitation on it. We should look for those opportunities. We should let them come and be part of our character that is always present, without limits, like faith, like charity. Some of those things that we're told about, we should not put limitations on. We call ourselves Christians. You know, that word that we use means we are followers of Christ. But it also means we are Christ-like. We have those qualities in us to show others, to help others, to do the things that Christ did. Jesus told us, he says, you want to know what to do in my church? And he also meant, you want to know what to do in your life? Do the things you've seen me do. 3 Nephi 8:49 to 55, he says, behold, I am the light. What do we use lights for? To see what's going on. You walk into a dark room, you turn on the light, now you can see everything. He says, I am the light. Look at me. You can see what you are supposed to do. I've set an example before you. What are examples for? You know, cool thing today, I don't use it as much as some people, you can go on YouTube and see an example how to do everything. You know, I don't know how to change this carburetor. Boom, there it is. Guy just walked me through it, you know. Example, example, example. Jesus says, I am the example. Do those things which you've seen me do. Behold, I am the light which you shall hold up. Ah, people are supposed to see it. You, he says, that I hold up, he said, you hold up that light which I have put and which you have seen me do. This is a big responsibility for us. And this is just a lead-in to what I'm going to talk about. Jesus commanded to do all these things which we've seen him do. And we often use this verse for a guide on the ordinances that we do in the church, what we practice. But it should be an example how we live. how we treat others, how we respond to situations. I'm going to take this opportunity to look at one particular quality that should be present in us also. And sometimes you have a lot of opportunities for it. Sometimes you have rare opportunities, but I'm sure each of you have opportunities. I'm going to start with a verse. I'm going to let you sneak a little bit into my head, how I think, which can be kind of weird sometimes, but this is how it is. I'm going to read a verse that somebody read in their sermon a month ago or so. Now, there's a story, and I can't precisely articulate the thoughts, why it hit me so hard, but I started to question myself when I heard this verse, and I asked myself questions about my life, about how I'm doing it, about an event that took place just a little bit before that. And I started really thinking about it. Now, this story, if you read this story from the very beginning, which the minister might have, and I might have been thinking about something else, it wouldn't have hit me as hard because it answers what I had to research. But I'm going to let you in where I started listening, apparently, or he started. I'm not sure. I don't remember who it is. But it's in John chapter 11, and I'm going to start in verse 30. Now, Jesus was not yet come into the town, but was in a place where Martha met him. And the Jews then which were with her in the house and comforted her, and they saw Mary, and she rose up hastily and went out, followed her, saying, "She goeth unto the grave to weep there." Then when Mary had come where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet, saying unto him, "Lord, if thou hadst been here, my brother had not died." When Jesus therefore saw her weeping, and the Jews also weeping, which came with her, he groaned in the spirit and was troubled. I got that underlined bold on my notes. He was troubled. And that's where I'm going to stop. And I started thinking, why was he troubled? What kind of trouble was he having? Like I said, if you start in the story, you know exactly what the trouble he was having. But the speaker, I don't think, began at the beginning. So it struck me very hard about Jesus being troubled because somebody had a problem, because her brother died. You know, being a missionary in foreign fields where people live, often oppressed by their governments, often in poverty, often live from day to day wondering how they're going to meet the next day. There's a lot of requests. And I'm the missionary. And guess who the requests come to? They come to me. And I realize that time to time, I'm troubled. I'm overwhelmed. I mean, sometimes there's a line of people waiting to talk to me. And sometimes I'm troubled. Even America, I see and hear things that are going on, things that people need, issues that people have, and I'm troubled. So let's consider the word Jesus used here, or what they used for Jesus, that he was troubled. Words can actually be tricky. That's why there's so many versions of the Bible. You know, they take and they translate the words. So instead of seeing trouble, they use some other word. Did they get it right? Well, if there's 15 versions of it, probably 14 of them at least got it wrong. But the words in English don't always exactly tell you. You know, trouble can be a lot of different things. Don't always tell you exactly what it is. You know, in Swahili, the word for rice has different words. There's a word for cooked rice, and there's a different word for uncooked rice. However, the word beautiful, nice, good, wonderful, they're all one word, Missouri. Every time I say, well, how do you say that's beautiful? How do you say that's gorgeous? How do you say that's good? How do you say it? It's Missouri, one word. It doesn't really explain the difference between this is a good book versus that's a beautiful sunset. Doesn't make that change. Well, let's take English, for example. It doesn't always do it either, does it? How about the word bark? Is it what a dog does, or is it something on a tree? What about a bat? Something you use in a game? Or is it something that flies around and sucks your blood? They actually don't. We have a lot of vampire bats in Africa, and they've never sucked my blood. Never did it. What about a bank? So where are you going to get your money out, or is it along a river? How about a fly? Is it a mode of transportation, or is it something you're going to swat? You go on a date, or do you eat it off of a tree? What comes to your mind when I say wave? Probably two different things. What about park? What about watch? What about light? What about match? They all have different meanings, don't they? So I was drawn to this verse. Troubled. Why was he troubled? Was he thinking to himself, why are they asking me, why are they telling me about something I can do nothing about? The man has died. He's already in the tomb. Are you challenging me to do something? Are you asking me to do something? What would you do if I wasn't here? Why was he troubled? And I just kept contemplating, kept thinking about it. Researching the word, I found he was troubled because he saw their sorrow. He felt their pain. He had a connection to them, to their life, to their circumstance. Mary was in great sorrow, and she wept. And he was troubled because she was troubled. He was compassionate and caring for other people. This is an example of Christ's character. This is the key to my sermon, is compassion. It is something that we have to have. It's something that I keep exploring in my life. What is good? What is right? What is compassion? And compassion may not always be handing something out, but it is something that we need to have. Jesus, the very Son of God, had great compassion for those in misery. In all their suffering, he too suffered. It says here that he was troubled. Scriptures tell us, as the body of Christ, that we need to have compassion. We need to see the need and feel the need and be a part of the need of other people. Mosiah 9, 39 through 40. And now if you desire to come into the fold of God and be called his people and are willing to bear one another's burdens that they may be light, Yea, are you willing to mourn with those that mourn, to comfort those that stand in need of comfort, to stand as a witness of God of all times and all things and all places, even until death, that you may be redeemed of God and be numbered with those of the first resurrection, that you may have eternal life? It's something I use when somebody says they want to be baptized often. Are you willing to do that? Are you willing to make burdens of people light? It's compassion. The book of etymology, I don't know if you ever heard of that before. Etymology is a study of origin and history of words, tracing their development from early forms of language. A lot of words there. It says compassion, feeling sorrow or a deep tendency, tenderness for one who is suffering or experiencing misfortune. Misfortune, a problem, suffering, tenderness. Do we have that for people in the world? Compassion is a quality we depend on from God. We need his compassion. There's the most used verse in the world, John 3:16, God so loved the world, he gave his only begotten son. He did not condemn the world, but through Jesus Christ we're saved. God's compassion for us. The world, think about it. It's not this planet that we're living on. It's the people he's talking about. These people, sinners, every one of us. Unworthy, every one of us. Corrupted individuals. People of this world constantly turning away from God. Prone to violence. Prone to self-satisfaction. People that change the natural use of their bodies. People that are trying to redesign God's creation for men and women. People that look everywhere but to God for answers to the troubles of the world. Despite that, he gave his son for us to redeem us from ourselves, from the way we live, from our failures, from our sin, because of the weakness of the flesh. Compassion, it is there, and we depend upon it from God. And Jesus was going to come and show us this. Isaiah, he prophesied about Jesus Christ coming and the things that he would do. In Isaiah 53, I'll start in verse 2. For he shall grow up before him as a tender plant and a root out of a dry ground. He hath no form nor comeliness. And when you see him, there is no beauty that we should desire him. He is despised. He is rejected of men. A man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. He hid, as it were, our faces from him. He was despised, and we esteemed him not. Surely he has borne our griefs. He carried our sorrows, yet we esteemed him stricken, smitten of God, and afflicted. But he was wounded for our transgressions. He was bruised for our iniquities. The chastisement of our peace upon him, and with his stripes we are healed. Compassion, that's what Jesus Christ was about. It's a form of charity, the pure love of Jesus Christ, such love that he died and he paid for our very faults. I'm going to use a few examples of Christ's compassion. Things that we often say, and we refer to them as the miracles of Christ. But if we look at them closely, they are his acts of compassion for people that he came in contact with. I'm going to start in Mark 1:40-42. A man with leprosy came to Jesus and begged him on his knees, "If you are willing, can you make me clean?" It says Jesus was moved with compassion. And Jesus reached out his hand and touched the man. "I am willing," he said, "be clean." Immediately the leprosy left him and he was clean. Why is this compassion? Leprosy was highly stigmatized disease. Lepers were isolated and considered unclean. Nobody wanted to get near them because they would catch it. But here, Jesus reached out and touched him, which no one would dare to do. This was a profound act of love and compassion for this man. And he healed him, showing the man care for his physical and his emotional suffering. He showed this act of compassion when he saw somebody in trouble. Other acts of compassion demonstrated by Jesus. Mark 8:22. "I have compassion on the multitude because they have now been with me 3 days and have nothing to eat." Here he is. He's connecting to his audience. "They've been with me. It's been 3 days. They had nothing to eat. And I'm going to send them away fasting to their homes. And they will faint along the way. For many have come from far away." Compassion. He's thinking about them. He's caring for them. This is when, he got the loaves and the fishes and he fed 4,000 people. We'd like to talk about the miracle. But he did the miracle because of compassion for those about him. He wasn't thinking about himself. He wasn't thinking about, "Okay, I'm teaching these people." He's thinking about them. He's looking at the need that they had. Kind of similar in 3 Nephi 8, 2 and 3. It says, "I perceive ye are weak." A group of people were there. They were listening to him. He says, "I perceive you are weak. I see you're getting tired. You've been here a long time. And they cannot understand all my words which I commanded the Father to speak unto you at this time. Therefore, go unto your homes and ponder upon these things which I've said, and ask the Father in my name that you may understand, and prepare your minds for tomorrow, and I will come again." In both cases, he connected to the needs of people around him. And they weren't his best friends. He just met them, large groups of people, but he still had compassion upon them. He cared for them. He cared for their needs. This is the compassion that we need to show. Later, when they came back, Jesus reminded them of the promise of his compassion towards them. And he quoted Isaiah chapter 54. And in 3 Nephi 10:19-25, it says, "O thou afflicted, tossed with tempest and not comforted, behold, I will lay thy stones with fair colors and lay thy foundation with sapphire, and I will make thy windows of agate and thy gates of carbuncles and all thy borders of pleasant stone. And all the hot of the Lord, and great shall be the peace of thy children. In righteousness shalt thou be established. Thou shalt be far from oppression, and thou shalt not fear from terror, for I shall come near thee. Behold, they shall surely gather together against thee. Not by me, who shall ever gather together against thee? They shall fall for thy sake. Behold, I have created the smith that bloweth the coals in the fire, and bringeth forth an instrument for his work, and hath created the waster to destroy. No weapon that is formed against thee shall prosper, and every tongue that shall vile against thee in judgment shall condemn. This is the heritage of the servants of the Lord, and their righteousness is of me, saith the Lord. This is the heritage. He has compassion for us. He is going to protect us. It's been prophesied before his birth. He carried it out. He reconfirmed it to the people in this land. I am with you. I know your need. I will protect you because I have compassion for you. I'd like to look at another reference. It's found in Mark chapter 5, 21 and 22. And when Jesus was passed over again by ship unto the other side, much people gathered unto him, and he was nigh unto the sea. And behold, there cometh one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus by name. And when he saw him, he fell at his feet, and he besought him greatly, saying, My little daughter lieth at the point of death. I pray thee, come and lay thy hands on her, and she may be healed, and she may live. And Jesus went with him, and much people followed him and thronged him. Here he was. He got on a boat. He went over the lake. He was already tired. He had done a lot of work. And somebody approached him. Come with me. Come heal my daughter. Okay, here it is. Another request. Here's my chance to take a break. I got somebody asking me for help. He says he went with him. He was willing. So he was going. And they were on a job. They were on a mission. And here they go. At the same time, he was pressing through a crowd of people. And a woman comes up and touches his garment. And he says, Who touched me? And his disciples said, What do you mean, who touched you? There's crowds of people everywhere. Who touched me? I felt my healing spirit go out of me. Not disturbed because somebody touched him, but he wanted to see who got healed. In verse 32, it says, And he looked around about to see her that had done this thing. But the woman, fearing and trembling, I just made a mistake. I got caught. I touched him. Fearing and trembling, knowing what she had done to her, came and fell down before him, told him all the truth. And he said unto her, Daughter, thy faith hath made thee whole. Go in peace, and behold thy plague. On a mission, busy, crowded, tired, hungry, all the things that happen to missionaries. God asked for another help, on his way to do it, and stopped because of some poor lady had a problem. And he stopped and talked to her and said, Your faith has healed you. Go, you're free from this plague. Acts of compassion. There's a story. Jesus heals a blind man. Luke 18, starting verse 35. And it came to pass, as he had come nigh unto Jericho, a certain blind man set away begging. Okay, here we have it. A beggar. Have you ever seen a beggar in Independence? Yeah, you have. And hearing the multitude pass by, he asked what it meant. And they told him that Jesus of Nazareth passed by. And he cried, saying, Jesus, thou son of David, have mercy on me. And they which went before rebuked him that he should hold his peace. And they cried so much more, Thou son of David, have mercy on me. And Jesus stood and commanded him to be brought unto him. And when he had come near, he asked him, saying, What will thou I do unto thee? And he said, Lord, that I may receive my sight. And Jesus said unto him, receive thy sight. Thy faith has saved thee. Here it is. He found a beggar. He didn't give him money. He gave him what he could. And he was able to heal him. And he gave him his sight. But he took the time and he saw the need. And he saw the problem. And he addressed it. And he says, faith, not has given you your sight. He says, faith has saved you. And immediately received his sight and followed him. Here's a key thing here. And it glorified God. Glorified God. And all the people, when they saw it, gave praise unto God. This is a big part of compassion. We don't show compassion for others. We don't help others. We don't feel the need of others and comfort them that they might think more of us, but that they glorify God. Our works that we do glorify God. You know, Jesus, he expounded to his disciples more acts of compassion, which they are to show, what they are be doing, including visiting the sick, those in prison, feeding the hungry. He said in Matthew 25, 35 through 40, "For I was hungry, and you gave me meat. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. Naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came unto me." Well, of course, the first thing they did is they asked, "When did we do all these such noble acts unto you, Jesus?" You know, if Jesus Christ walked into this room right now and said, "I need something to eat. Hey, we got a lot of donuts downstairs. You can have them all, you know. Well, I need some shoes. Here, take mine." It'd be easy to do it to Jesus Christ. They said, "When did we do this to you? We've been with you this whole time. I don't remember ever doing this for you." And then he explained it. "Then shall the righteous answer him, saying, Lord, when we saw thee hungry and fed thee, or thirsty and gave ye drink, when we saw you a stranger and took you in, and naked and clothed thee, or when we saw you sick or in prison and came unto thee?" You know the answer. And the king shall answer unto them, saying, "Verily I say unto you, and as much as ye have done it unto the least of these of my brethren, you have done it unto me." You've done it to the least. You saw the need, and you took care of it. Obviously, we cannot do it all. We cannot feed everyone in this world. We cannot clothe everyone in this world. But occasionally we find the opportunity to exercise compassion. And it may be very slight. It may be a compassion that we have to exercise by reeling ourselves back in. Something's troubling us. You know, why is this guy sitting on my car? Get off my car. Maybe he's got a problem. Why are you there? You know, what's the problem? Consider the place where they're at. Consider where they're living, what life they're living, how they got to where they are. What is the problem? Compassion is beyond sympathy for somebody's need. It is taking action where you can. Where you can in someone's struggles or hardship or troubles in their life. But it requires an emotional connection with them. Just handing somebody a dollar is not act of compassion. It's emotional connection. a willingness to take some degree of action, if possible, if feasible, if it is the right action. Obviously, somebody said, can you come buy me a fifth of whiskey? The answer is no. You know, that's not compassion. What's good for them? What do they really need? These are acts of compassion that are counted towards our righteousness, because the compassion you show towards God's special creation, as he did, brings glory to him, glorifies God. I want to make myself clearer that I'm not asking you to give a handout to everybody you see. That's not what I'm trying to say. I'm saying we see suffering in this world, and we need to try to emotionally connect. It requires emotional intelligence. It requires understanding human struggles. It requires us to put ourselves in their place. What do I really need? What do they really need? Christ's sense of compassion is one of the central themes of the gospel. Like I said, we often call them miracles, but they're all based out of acts of compassion. You know, Luke 7, 19 and 22, I'm going to read it. It says, and John, we're talking about John the Baptist. He's wondering, you know, he was a forerunner to Jesus Christ. And he's wondering, you know, okay, I thought you were him, but are you really, you know, have you manifested yourself yet? And John the Baptist, calling unto him two of his disciples, sent them to Jesus, saying, art thou he that cometh? Are you the one? Or should we be looking for another one? Oh, man, that was pretty bold of him, wasn't it? And Jesus answering said unto them, go your way and tell John what things you have seen and heard. Thou hast seen that how thou the blind see, the lame walk, the lepers are clean, the deaf hear, and the dead are raised. You're looking for him? Did I not do those things? But he didn't stop there. Another act of compassion that he did, and the poor, the gospel was preached. That is an act of compassion. That's why the church sends missionaries out to all this world to preach the gospel, that they might have the way of eternal life. And it's done by the efforts of every single one of you. It's an act of compassion when you support the work of the gospel in this last day. You know, it's not about going out to help all the poor with their financial needs. Jesus made the comment to one of his disciples. He says, the poor will always be with you. And they still are here 2,000 years later. We are not going to make everybody rich. That is not why we go out. A massive part of our duty is to take the saving gospel of Jesus Christ to all the world. It's an act of compassion to apply yourself where you can to do this, because the need is very present. And the decisions on how we help, how we can help the needs and the needs of the church are done with compassion. Apparently, I looked it up, apparently compassion is an inherent trait. It's already in us to connect to somebody. But it needs to develop beyond your own family and friends. It's easy if one of you say, hey, can you help me, to say yes. It may not be as easy with a stranger, but you have to connect emotionally, put yourself in their place, find out how they got to the point they're at, and take action where you can, if you should. It's a hard thing to do. I'm not telling you it's easy, and I'm not telling you to fix everybody's problem. I'm saying we just need to exercise compassion, and that is connecting with others. To develop, consider the needs of others. You know, Ricky started with a verse a few weeks ago. I'm going to end my sermon with that verse. You didn't have to unplug the clock. I am 10 minutes ahead of schedule. I know I'm compassionate toward you. I see you're weak and you're hungry and tired. Maybe bored. I don't know, but we're going to read Philippians 4, 4 through 9. Rejoice in the Lord always. And again, I say rejoice. Let your moderation be known to all men. The Lord is at hand. Be careful for nothing. There's another one of those phrases you make you go, I mean, be careful. Do I jump off a cliff when it's stupid? No. It means anxious, distracted thoughts. Don't get distracted from the things that we are to do. But in everything, by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known unto God. And the peace of God, which passes all understanding, shall keep your hearts and your minds through Jesus Christ. Verse 8, finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true. I hope I expressed to you today one thing that is true, that Christ exercised compassion, and he set that example for us to exercise compassion in this world. Whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, if there be any praise, think on these things. Those things which have both learned and received and heard and seen me do, and the God of peace shall be with you. Think on those things that we've heard, received, seen him do. Think on those things. God bless you each. Thank you.